You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm Jay Taylor, your host, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again John Rubino of DollarCollapse.com. That's I would call that a one-stop shop place to go for key important information on the economy and on the precious metals markets and a lot of other things. Thanks so much for being with us again, John.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for having me back.
Always good to talk with you. And I just want to talk a little bit. We've titled today's show "Waiting for the next Herbert Hoover." I think is the way we put it. My own thinking was, who in the world would want to be president when we're heading into the kind of difficulties that we seem to be heading into economically? Now, I don't think most people think when the vaccines come, we'll just be back to normal. Everything's going to be honky-dory. But I don't believe you think that. But I'd like to ask you, what do you think now? It looks, 99.9% certain it's going to be a Biden presidency. It's all over but the shouting, so to speak, and the Electoral College certifying. But what do you see coming down the pike for this government? Especially, let's say that the Senate goes to the Democrats.
Well, if the Senate went to the Democrats and the Democrats were completely in charge of the government, yep, we would see immense amounts of spending. Because, the main priority in the year ahead for the Democrats is to bail out the cities and states that are bankrupt.
Right.
Because those entities are mostly run by Democrats,
right,
and they're mostly populated by public sector employees. So that's a totally Democrat scene in Chicago or Los Angeles or someplace like that. So they really, really don't want those cities and states to go bankrupt. Republicans don't care so much. So if we have a divided government where the Republicans hang on to the Senate, they're not going to be in any hurry to bail out, Chicago or someplace like that, because what's in it for them? And so then things get really dicey. But basically, 2021 in general is a very big decision year, because the pandemic effectively bankrupted all kinds of industries and states and cities. These things, just like the airlines or the cruise ships or hotels or restaurants or, a lot of cities, just basically can't make payroll given the situation with their customer base and their taxpayers. And if they don't get some new money from somewhere, they're going to have to start defaulting on their bonds, laying people off, and, generally just freaking out the rest of the economy. So nobody wants that. But the amount of money that's necessary to bail them all out is so immense that it's a big decision for a government. I mean, if it takes $500 million or $500 billion to do it, it's a no-brainer. You go ahead and do it. But if it takes $8 trillion to do it, then that's kind of a different thing, because you're borrowing so much money and creating so much new currency in order to finance all that new debt that you shift the pressure over to different parts of the financial markets. The bond market will be okay in that kind of a situation, but maybe the currency markets won't. In other words, who wants to own the currency of a country that's doing something like that? So that's the decision that has to be made next year. This is the kind of thing we've been kicking down the road for a really mm-hmm. long time, because we could get away with it. But the pandemic and the government policies that flowed from the pandemic have put us on the spot for next year. There's no way to kick this down the road. So we're either going to have to, literally bail out $5 or $6 or $7 trillion worth of zombie entities out there in the next year, or we're going to let them go bankrupt, and we're going to risk a 1930-style depression. And that's where Herbert Hoover comes into the discussion, because who's ever in charge when the latter thing happens, if we were to have a deflationary depression because mm-hmm. of all this, mm-hmm. Whoever's in charge is going to be tainted with it, right? You know, we still remember Herbert Hoover's name to this yeah. day because he presided over the beginnings of the Great Depression. And we would not know who he was otherwise. Historians would, but regular people would not know mm-hmm. that name. Nobody wants to be this generation's Herbert Hoover, but oh, whoever's exactly. in charge is running that risk. And that's why, you know, you kind of alluded to how you got to view these elections with mixed feelings. Mm-hmm. Because say your guy wins, he wins a position of power in a really untenable situation where anything he does risks a gigantic crisis that puts him in the history books forever. So you don't really want that for a politician that you like. So, you know, it's almost like it's better if the other guy wins, because then they're the ones who might be, they and their party might be tainted for a whole generation as being the people who presided over the biggest crash in history. So very interesting year coming up next year.
That's an understatement, I would say. So, John, let's say that the Republicans retain control of the Senate, and they need to win one of those seats. They need to just win one. I don't know what the prospects are of them winning. I don't know. I have no idea. I think you can't believe the pollsters. They're so wrong all the time. I have no idea. But let's say that the Republicans hold the Senate. Better chance for a deflationary event then in that. Do you think in that case?
A bigger risk that divided government will lead to, well, here's what will happen probably. The government will dither. They won't come out with all the money for everybody that needs it. And the stock market will see that. Note that there are a lot of big bankruptcies coming down the pipe and freak out. We'll get something like we had in March of this year when the stock market just fell off the table. Mm-hmm. And that will galvanize opinion in Washington. In other words, everybody will panic at once. Won't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. In the face of a crisis, in other words, an equities bear market that metastasizes into the rest of the economy and causes that replay of the 1930s again, which we're, you know, on the verge of. We owe so much money that we're incredibly financially fragile. And even a sustained equities bear market could cause something like that to happen. So the government will then panic. And then we'll get, maybe in the second half of the year, the gigantic bailouts and the massive money creation and the negative interest rates that we would get under the Democrats right away. So either way, we're going to end up with something like that. And it's just a question of what we have to go through to get it. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes, what is the ultimate impact on the currency markets? In other words, is this the end of the dollar as a fiat currency? Or can it hold on? Can fiat currencies survive another gigantic round of new credit creation and new currency creation? And that we don't know, because mm-hmm. frankly, I thought 2008, 2009, all the bailouts then would be the end of mm-hmm. this process. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. So, you know, whether I think it's the end or not really doesn't matter, because I was wrong last time I thought it was the end. So we'll just have to see.
It's just hard to predict, impossible to predict. But certainly, you know, for the longest time, John, we could rely on the kindness of strangers. Foreigners would buy our debt, and we've gotten ourselves into deep, deep trouble, I would argue, because now we're so dependent on foreign debt, we haven't saved ourselves. We've been taught. The Keynesians convinced us all that we should be spending more than we earn, that we should be deficit spending our way to prosperity. And it seemed to work for a long time. But now I'm wondering what strangers are there to keep the game going. And if there aren't any there, then it would seem that the Fed has to create money out of nothing to finance the debt, which then would leave us in some, you know, our currency in some risk, I suppose, if not a lot of risk. So, I mean, is there anybody out there that, you know, foreign entities that would really be interested in buying U.S. treasuries at virtually zero or negative real rates?
Well, here's where things get kind of ironic, okay, because we're talking about what a mess the U.S. is. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the world, in a lot of ways, is in even worse shape than the U.S. is. So it's completely possible, because that's how that's how the dollar has stayed, quote unquote, strong for the last decade, is that the rest of the world is in such a mess that they look at us as the safe haven. As bad as we are, they look at the dollar and think, well, okay, that's better than the yuan, at least, or better than the euro, or better than the ruble. And so, you know, rich people in these other countries are willing to hold dollars or U.S. real estate or U.S. blue chip equities as a way of protecting themselves from what they see as even worse problems in their home countries. And you know, you look at what China is doing, for instance. They're borrowing more money than we are. And, you know, they're a smaller economy and they're still a developing economy. So without financial markets that are nearly as deep and liquid as U.S. financial markets. So they're running the risk of a credit crisis that might dwarf whatever happens here, which might mean that a ton of Chinese money will flow into treasuries, right? And that'll prop up the dollar for a while longer. But none of this is a good thing, because were that to happen, it would just allow us to keep borrowing even more and more money, which means the crisis, when it finally happens, will be even bigger. And that's been the story of the last 30 years. You know, we really should have had the defining catharsis in the financial markets when the tech stock bubble burst in 2000. But we kicked that can down the road to 2007 when the housing bubble burst, which also should have been the, you know, the flush out, all the bad debt in the system going bust and us starting over from a sustainable point, with older and wiser and more chastened. But that didn't work either, because we took on trillions and trillions and trillions of new dollars of debt in order to keep that from happening. Right. So now here we are, even more deeply indebted than we were in those past crises. And we're going to try to do the same thing. So the only question is whether it will work again, you know, and I would argue that the numbers are just so unbelievable right now that it can't possibly work. but
we thought that before.
Well,
so John, China is, you know, as you say, they're going into bigger debt, but who are they borrowing from? Are they not borrowing from their own people for the most part? And China also has this net exports, whereas we've had, you know, deficits in our trade accounts for ever since we went off the gold standard. So doesn't that make a difference? Because we are dependent, psychologically we're dependent. Americans are dependent on living beyond our means. And now all of a sudden, if we have to, you know, if one way or another, if the piper has to be paid and we have to start, you know, it's a day of reckoning, and we have to start living within our means or less than our means, essentially, to pay back what we've excessive spending in the past. It seems to me that China probably isn't in that kind of a position, because they're not borrowing from the rest of the world very much. I think they're starting a bond market now, a global bond market, but they haven't really borrowed that much from the rest of the world, have they?
Well, they're actually borrowing a lot of dollar denominated debt right now. So they're ramping that up. But yeah, they also borrow a lot internally. They have these special purpose vehicles, which are basically their shadow banking system, where some region will set up a special entity that borrows money based on the creditworthiness of the region. And then they use it to create entire new cities and roads and bridges and airports and everything. But then nobody uses or lives in those new cities, so they don't generate enough cash flow to pay anything off. And right now, China's seeing a wave of defaults that kind of flow back to that practice, where state-backed entities borrow huge amounts of money because it's the state. You know, you're lending money to the government, so it's risk-free. But it's not really, if the entity can go bankrupt. So that's starting to happen for China. But, you know, I see what you're saying, though, where as long as we're running a trade deficit, these other countries have new money coming in.
Exactly. With which they have foreign currencies already. Yeah.
Well, see, that kind of looks like a perpetual motion machine, because we have a currency that everybody wants, so we can issue all this new currency, right? Because they'll take dollars. And we use that to buy stuff, which then finances the factories that are going up all over the world. And it looks like you should be able to keep this going forever, but you can't really, because we're taking on debt at each step of the process that some way, somehow has to be paid off. And our ability to pay off the debt is not growing nearly as fast as the debt itself.
Yeah.
If you look at debt as a percentage of GDP, it's soaring. It was already higher than it was ever been before 20 years ago, and now it's some order of magnitude higher than that.
So the new money has to be created in order to have liquidity to pay off the debt. So as you were saying, if the Democrats control the government completely, then they will be in a position for fiscal spending, I suppose, or probably, I think Janet Yellen is the one that is being talked about as the Federal Reserve Chairman. She certainly was no hawk. She'll be printing more money probably than we can imagine. I mean, it seems to me that if the Democrats gain control of the whole government and they have Janet Yellen at the Fed, why is John Williams not right in predicting that we're heading for a hyperinflationary event?
Well, Janet Yellen is going to be the Treasury Secretary.
Oh, the Treasury Secretary.
She'll be in charge of the deficit spending.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. G. William Miller was the last time, I think, that a Federal Reserve member became the Treasury Secretary.
And
we know how that turned out.
That was
on its way to becoming a hyperinflationary event, for sure, before Paul Volcker stepped in and put his foot on the brakes and stopped putting gas into the, you know, feeding gas into the economy, fuel. And then we had a horrific decline. I mean, that certainly won't happen this time voluntarily, will it? I can't imagine that anybody could do that now.
Volcker thing?
Yeah.
No, it's impossible. Back then, we got away with that as a way of stabilizing an inflationary environment because we were in pretty good shape financially. We didn't have that much debt back then.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we tried to do that now, if we raised interest rates to 18%, can you imagine all the adjustable rate mortgages and all the business loans that are like LIBOR plus 1% or whatever? You know, those things would just blow up.
And we have $27 trillion in U.S. debt. Imagine just what the interest would be like if we went to 5%,
6%. And see, we wouldn't even get to that point where the bond markets blow up because the derivatives markets, which are infinitely larger than the bond markets, and a bunch of the derivatives out there are interest rate related, right? So if we spiked interest rates to control inflation, we would blow up the derivatives markets. So all the big banks basically would just cease to exist. Unless we bailed them out with trillions and trillions of new dollars. So we can't do that. I mean, we can try, but that's what would happen. You know, we would blow up the financial system, which means we have no tools left for stopping inflation when it starts to accelerate. And Jay, I would argue that it's already accelerating. Look at the housing market right now. House prices are spiking for no apparent reason because we're in a recession, you know, or we're just emerging from a recession. House prices never spike in a recession, but they did this time.
Yeah, incredible.
Healthcare costs are rising. Lots of other stocks and bonds, of course, are going way up. So we've got pockets of almost hyperinflation right now. And when that starts spreading to the rest of the economy, we're back in the 1970s with no way to fix it.
Yeah. You know, Michael also points out, Michael Oliver, the first segment of our show today, he's turning extremely bullish on commodities and on all of the basic commodities, like oil is really starting to move. And I would think it was 2 weeks ago or so, he really turned bullish looking at the Bloomberg Commodity Index. That's what he looks at. John, with just a couple of minutes left, I want to ask you, what do you make of this Bitcoin phenomenon and gold? And, you know, should we give up on gold and just go for Bitcoin now or what?
Well, I wish I understood Bitcoin because there's no real valuation measure. There's not like a PE ratio for Bitcoin that tells you when it's over and undervalued because, it went from pennies to several thousand dollars an ounce. Then it went down to a couple hundred bucks an ounce. Then it went to $15,000 an ounce. Now it's back. And then it went down to $3,000 and now it's back up. I have no idea why it's doing any of these things. So I don't know how to trade it. But there's no reason why cryptos in some form can't be a store of value in the future, but I still think gold has advantages over everything else. That's the bedrock of your financial life. And then you branch out into other things like cryptos and the gold mining stocks and stuff like that from there. So they're not mutually exclusive. You know, all of these things should be part of the mix for somebody who has a fairly big crisis-related portfolio?
Yeah, it's a mix is right, and I can't really understand Bitcoin as well. I did buy some and make some money on some, but I don't really understand. It was a speculation. It doesn't make sense to me. I guess that's about it for today, John. I just want to know if we head into a deflation with 1 minute left here. We head into a deflation. What kind of things do you want to own? If we go into a hyperinflation, what kind of things do you want to own?
Well, in a deflation, you might get something like March of this year when everything went down. You know, gold went down, stocks went down, everything. But the government's reaction to the beginning of a deflationary crash will be so overwhelmingly inflationary that you want to be in precious metals and other kinds of real assets big time in that kind of a situation. So, the story is the same as it's been for all the time that you and I've been talking. Yep. Real assets.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, we'll have to leave it go at that. John, thank you so much for being with us again.
Sure thing, Jay.
We'll look forward to talking again sometime soon. Folks, that is it for this week. Next week, David McIlvenny will be with me, and Dr. Quentin Henning will be back next week to talk about Lion One Metals. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.